So yeah, I feel happy to see some familiar faces, and it's nice that many of you can join. We also have our American, Canadian, and Peruvian group here. I was thinking about just this subject of self that the Buddha teaches about how he encourages us to have an understanding of how we create this sense of identity and personality and self, and to foster a sense of understanding about that being a delusion, that being something that we are essentially concocting. That we are bringing into being. And it's important, one thing to note, that the Buddha didn't teach what people will sometimes say is no self. So there can be a subtle difference between that not self and no self. So no self would be more of a sense of annihilation, of nothingness. There's nothing there. Not self is more so when we point to something that we are thinking is who or what we are, and we say that's not it. So that difference between no and not is that the not is acknowledging that there is actually something there, right? There is a sense of like who I am, what I am, how I think, what I do. But when we take that to be permanent, that thing that is there, that is present for us, it doesn't actually have that sense of permanence to it. It's changing, it's moving. So the difference between how sometimes people believe or have a sense of what the Buddha was teaching in terms of there's just nothing there. There's where it's just a delusion. We don't almost really exist. Is what the sense of that can bring up. No, it's that it's like how many of you have heard the analogy of an onion. You take away peels of an onion, you don't have anything that's like really there as an essence. But it's more that the fact that these things, the peels are still there, the layers are still there, but it's not actually that there. It's like we can't find an essence. It's just like, well, that's all there is. All there is are these sort of layers. And the layers are always changing. We can think of these layers as not being substantial. So what's kind of the hardest characteristic from my sense of how the Buddha teaches of dukkha, anicca, so that's a sense of suffering, or that things are changing, or anatta, is this sense of self, because it's very elusive. And one of the reasons it's also very difficult is that we cling to it and we habituate to it to the degree that we can have a very hard time seeing clearly into how we're clinging to a sense of identity and how I think about things and my personal belief in my existence of this and that. So for many of us, this can kind of bring up kind of a sense of like, well, how do we practice with this then? Because one of the things that the Buddha taught is that you can't find this sense of self. You can't actually locate it anywhere. And if you think there's ever a time that you can point at it and say, there it is, that's my sense, that's, or that is of the sense of, but that's myself. There it is, I found the self. And now I can take it out. It's more like, as the word I was actually using was a sense of it. We can have a sense of it, but we can't see it. We can't see it as an individuated thing, because it is exactly not that. It's not something that is cohesive. It's just layers. And the hard thing about it is that continuously, throughout our day, throughout an hour, throughout even a minute, we are constructing it. We are kind of building it up and trying to make it permanent. So if somebody asks us if we're hungry, The response might be, I don't know, but it's not usually that. It's like, I am not hungry, actually. No, I'm quite full right now. I don't really need to eat. I know how I'm feeling. But when we refer to that sense of I, then it kind of says, well, where, how do you know that? And how is that for you? And so, well, it's just a feeling I have. So we can, in certain ways, have a sense of our bodies and not attribute a sense of I to it. But when we get into something even more complex, like what is my political belief? What are the ideas that I think are important to me? Or, all of a sudden this sense really arises out of us about, like, well, I do have an opinion about that, and let me tell you about it. So when we feel that, then that is the opportunity we have in that moment, is to stop ourselves and say, okay, what is that that's going on right there? When this real sense of who I am or what I am is arising, and what usually comes up is we feel something very strongly about it. We feel a sense of tension, clinging, and we can hold on to these things very strongly, who and what I am. Like, for example, when we were chanting, Vivian kindly put up the chanting for us to see. And so I'm reading along very comfortably because that's nice. And then I say to myself, I don't need to read this. I've been doing this for 20 years. And I say, I'm going to stop reading now. And then I start reading some other line, the beginning of the chanting. And then that's what comes up. That's what comes up is this sense of, like, what? Oh my gosh, how did I do that? And that was so, and then a judgment about it. That was so stupid and ridiculous. And how, I've been doing this 20 years. And it's so silly because it's just an arbitrary experience, isn't it? What arises out of that, a sense of either embarrassment or the thought, the intention to think about that, even the intention to start that thought, there's this sense of, like, oh, I shouldn't be reading that, or I don't need to read that. And then all of a sudden it manifests in, I should do something about that, like, close my eyes because I don't need to look at it. And then all of a sudden something else arises. And when that arises, the sense of, like, having made a mistake, or like there's a moment, a lapse of mindfulness, the mind perhaps, even just the thought, I don't need to do that. And then the mind goes into some other, words or chant that occurred. And then there's this sense of judgment of who and what I am. I'm not a person who makes a mistake. Oh, I am a person who makes a mistake, or I shouldn't have made that mistake. And we jump right into that. So that's how quickly the sense of self arises. And it's so helpful for us to really have a sense of how we can really deal with that, so that we can have more wisdom arising. Oh, this is the sense of self. This is nothing to really add to or to ascribe any kind of importance to, except for the fact that it is occurring. And we can say, this is something that happens. I can have a sense of how it started, how this like worry about me and mine and who I am and what I am, what I should or shouldn't be doing occurs, and how quickly that occurs, how automatic it is for us. You just all of a sudden you make a tiny mistake, and of course then it's amplified like 30 or 40 times because there's 30 or 40 people there witnessing it, and then the I arises. Like, before that maybe it was, like an ethereal sense of just chanting together as one voice with 20, 30 other people, and then no, me, the importance of me and how I look or how I am or how I think about myself comes up. And the thing that's there is that we usually get arrested by that feeling. We get a sense of fear and this sense we have of being an identity, a person, actually gets much stronger for us in that moment. And we have an opportunity to really see that and not get tricked by it, because the trick is, how can I now preserve myself? How can I defend myself? How can I make it right? And the dropping away of that is when we see, like, oh, this is interesting. This has just come up out of something so innocuous and ridiculous that it doesn't really matter, and yet there's some importance ascribed to it. Making a mistake, it's like well, when as we've heard probably several times from our teachers, if we are unwilling to make a mistake, then we're unwilling to learn. That's how human beings learn, is they make a mistake and say, oh, okay, maybe next time I can see how I do this, rather than, oh, I'm going to make sure that never happens again so I don't feel embarrassed. Right? So this is like how to preserve the sense of me and mine, rather than how to have a sense of, oh, this would be so valuable if I could let go of this and not hold on to it and not put so much importance onto something that is so trivial. But what arises usually when we have these things happen is that the strength of it really causes us to cling to it so much, and we have a hard time letting go. So what we have in our tool belt in the Buddhist teaching is that if we just keep pointing at our experience, and knowing that the process is just to watch it rather than enter into, we would say, our my making and me making, and these sankharas that we're creating, these the sense of what we call as mental formations or concoctions, these creations that we have. And then we follow those. Those become our refuge, but they're the wrong refuge. It's like misunderstanding where we're supposed to point our attention. And so many of us know this, but yet it can be such an automatic process. It can be something that we're just not where we have a difficulty kind of stepping back from, and then really relaxing our sense of awareness into that sense. Oh, okay, interest into that is the sense I have of self. This is what the Buddha really encouraged us to study about ourselves, to really look into. And so for us, the more mature reaction would be, oh, that's interesting, or wow, this is exciting. Like I get to see this whole sense of what my, I am, the way I hold myself, the way I protect myself, in this very moment. And so it's really not getting fooled. We're trying to not be foolish. And in that way, then we're really protecting our own wisdom, or protecting our own awareness, and we're not letting it get carried away into proliferation and fear and a sense of like our minds just moving into sort of, oh yeah, this is a story of me and how I make mistakes all the time, and I really I don't know why this always occurs, and I should really make this better, and I got to get the chanting completely memorized so I never make this mistake again. And on and on we go into this story of me. And that's not to say that if we go in the opposite direction and we say, like, well, it all doesn't matter and nothing matters, and I'm just going to keep making mistakes and not even care about it, and in fact, I'm not going to practice any chanting anymore, I'm not even do chanting anymore, that's how I feel about it. And so we can kind of go to either extreme, right? Either sort of protecting ourselves or annihilating, and neither is there. What's the real importance around it is this sense of interest and using whatever is arising, even when it's uncomfortable, even when it's painful, even when it's something we really like. The feeling is, I don't want to look at that, and we say, like, no, actually, that's the only way to understand is to go in. That's the way out, as people say. That's the only way out is to go in. And so we have to, it's important, if we're really embracing the teachings, to understand that's what we're focused on. I had a recent conversation with someone, and it didn't it was an obvious experience I had of something that I used to do, I still do, but it's definitely diminished in me. But the sense that there was so much protection that I actually couldn't get through to the person, and I was really trying, But what I was being met with was, no, you're wrong about this. You're wrong about this. You're wrong about this. And so I saw that I was, there wasn't a way to kind of really get somewhere until I decided, okay, the only way for there to be any understanding in this is for the other person to actually take some time and step back and process what I have said to them alone. Because their sense of protecting themselves had become so strong that there was no way for me to even give any evidence or a sense of understanding around what I was observing for them. Because again, that sense of preserving the self was so strong. It was, you know, it can be, people can become so protective of this identity and this way that they want to hold themselves as being like, I am, that is not me. The way that this person is describing is not me. And they can almost to the point of lying to themselves about that, to protect that sense of self. So we, it's so important that for us to work with this, because if we can't or we won't, then we stop our progression in terms of really ending our own suffering. There isn't a way for us to kind of keep our bad habits and our sense of self-identity and protect ourselves, and yet still gain in wisdom and let go of our own suffering. It's like those two are they're opposites. They don't work together. So what ultimately needs to happen is that we have to face our own vulnerabilities and we have to be open to them. And when we do that, then we actually become stronger. The feeling that one might have before encountering the Buddha's teachings is that doesn't make any sense. Like, how can I be vulnerable and feel weak and be in a place where it can be either very painful or difficult, or I might have that sense of not wanting to look at what my experience is, and yet eventually that will make me stronger. So it's a very strange feeling, because sometimes when we encounter that in our own practice, even in our own meditations, that's the message that we can get. Like, if I allow myself to feel this pain or to go into this difficult area of my experience, then I'm going to be unprotected. I'm going to be it's going to be too vulnerable for me, and then we block ourselves from that. We kind of move ourselves away from it, which is very sad, because that again is where growth and strength can come from. So we're really kind of, when the Buddha talks about going against the stream of the world and towards the stream of Dhamma, this is what he's really talking about. He's giving us examples and ways in which we can kind of confront those things that are most difficult for us, and then we can come out actually through being a witness to them and allowing them to arise, allowing things that are actually incredibly painful to arise and to be present within us, and to still think, yeah, that's okay. This is okay. It's okay to make a mistake. It's not a problem. You know, but what is that feeling like? You know, can I bear with that feeling? Can I witness it? Can I watch it arise and cease? So when we do that, then we learn over a long period of time that this arising and ceasing is fine, that it isn't a problem to see that when we encounter something very difficult in our lives, we can have the courage to face it and be with it, because we know over time, I mean, this is what wisdom is, that it will also cease. And that the way that we fool ourselves is that we say to ourselves, this is gonna go on forever. I'm going to feel terrible forever. I'm going to feel depressed forever or anxious forever. And when we're very afraid, for example, then that fear tells us, well, it doesn't matter what I do. I mean, that is the feeling of fear. It doesn't matter what I do, I am absolutely in trouble for the rest of my life. No matter what happens, I'm damned. That's it. It's over. And that's the feeling of fear. But when we're present with that, something very different is going on. We're witnessing, we're watching it, but we're not moving with it in terms of this sense of self, like I am, you know, that my life is gone. Everything's bad now. And we just I was just thinking about this last night. We dedicated chanting. We did some paritta chanting, blessing chanting, for a man, younger to middle-aged man who ended up going to prison, and his mother has asked us to for blessings for him. This is the second time. And and he went to prison, and he was on suicide watch. And she's obviously, as a mother, having a very difficult time dealing with this. And I thought, like, what? And I know, he did some things that were very bad that put him in prison for a long time. Not probably not life, but a while. And what that must be like to feel so incredibly ashamed, and for others to know about it, and to really just think, okay, this is permanent for me. I'm just permanently a terrible, awful, horrible person, and deserve to be in prison. And having been on suicide watch, that means that somebody's suicidal. So that's like an extreme experience of, okay, how would one deal with something when the whole world, it just feels like the whole world is against one, and there's really not a way out. And imagining that for ourselves, like what something like that might be like. We make an extremely wrong, a very bad decision in our life, or a series of very bad decisions. And some of us may have actually done that and come out of it, or not. But it's how kind of life works. And the sense I have is, it's never good to overestimate ourselves to think that we can't actually be that same person. We actually can make a series of difficult, of bad decisions in our life, and some things have protected us from that, but it's not so far away. That's not so far away. And so in that situation, I recognize that, how painful that must be for this person. And this person was a guest in the monastery, so that's why it becomes a very a more like very visceral and real thing, having known someone like this, known that person. So we can imagine that, and also imagine ourselves, like, okay, like, having seen a good side of somebody who's done something, made some very terrible decisions, we also see that within ourselves, how we have multiple sides to this sense of self we have, the intentions we have within, and how we move with those intentions. And all of us can probably just look back at our day and say, like, oh yeah, that was not a great decision I made when I did that. That wasn't a great choice moving in that direction. But what for most of us, we experience that sense, so I'm a bad person because of that, rather than, oh, that was not a wise intention. So may I improve that next time? May I change that intention next time it comes up to have a different intention? So it becomes very impersonal. Like, there's not a person there. There are just a set of intentions. And we don't have to feel guilty, but we do. That doesn't mean that there isn't something that's what would be called a healthy remorse about that. The healthy remorse, I would say, is something where we're not saying, "Woe is me, I'm such a terrible person." It's just a sense, how can I not do that again? That's what healthy remorse is. It's not about judging ourselves. It's about saying, like, okay, what can I do? Because I see this as something that was not helpful for me, or harmful to others, or whatever it was. It wasn't good. The outcome wasn't good, or the intention wasn't good, or the karmic, what we call vipaka karma, was unbeneficial. And so how can I make sure that that doesn't reoccur? Because we want to identify that creating good karma, good actions, good results for ourselves, is the most important thing we can do. That's what will aid us in our life. That's kind of like what makes us very strong, is protecting ourselves with creating as many good intentions as we can in our lives. And yet at the same time, we don't have to say, that's me, I'm the greatest hero in the world. You know, look at all these good intentions I've had. Again, that sense of I can come back, and we while it's not it's helpful to kind of remember our good qualities, we also want to be careful of not propping ourselves up and looking down on others, you know, when they make mistakes, such as this younger man who's in prison now. I think, you know, I actually was reading some things of some of what people had said about him, because I, you know, I looked it up. Oh, what had happened here? And I thought, oh yeah, that's very sad. But the reactions were very sad, because it was just, they were terrible what people say in the world. I mean, just like absolute non-recognition that this is a human being. So once a crime has been committed, then they lose their human being status. And you know, people are saying, oh, should just shoot this person, or you know, take them out back and shoot them, or these kind of people all look the same, and da da da. And I just felt so sad reading that, because I said, oh, I actually met this person, spent some time with this person. And so while we can say that our karmic background is the sum of what we are, it's not our potential, it's not like everything about us, because it's changing all the time. So we have the ability to change. We always have the ability to move in a different direction, and have that different direction aid us, if we have the possibility of actually working with that. So it's very helpful just to, even though this idea of not self tends to be elusive, it's incredibly helpful to have a sense of it, to have a care for it, how it's arising, how we're creating that. And a lot of times it's just as simple as saying, oh, that's really interesting. We have a reaction, and instead of kind of moving with it and then completing the arc of like, this is who and what I am, and I'm just going to do what I am and do how I think, and maybe, you know, just kind of enact it. We can catch ourselves even in mid-sentence and say, whoa, okay, wow, there it is. That's me. That's clinging to me and mine, who and what I am. And we can tell someone, you know, we're talking to, like, oh, you know what? I think I'm getting a little carried away right now, and it's not so skillful what I'm saying. To be really careful with that. And then we can just kind of witness it. One of the forms of this that is most skillful is when we are in conversation with somebody, and we are seeing this kind of clinging or defensiveness or whatever it might be that we're guarding ourselves around, or we're feeling this sense of self come up, this sense of identity. And like this, you know, you don't talk to me that way. That kind of feeling that comes up, if we're aware of it, then we can actually move ourselves in a different direction, even in a conversation with someone else. You know, we can, it doesn't have to even be like before we speak. We can kind of say, like, oh, okay, I'm not coming from the right place right now. You know, how can I actually come from a place of less clinging to this idea of who and what I am? So, yeah, I think there's a lot of ways to try to bring this up for ourselves in our practice, a lot of ways to work with what the Buddha's teaching around not self is. The part of it that is very much entwined when we talk about these three characteristics, they're not like, they're so tied to each other, because we see, like, as we cling to self, then we suffer. And the clinging to self comes from the delusion of what we'd say is Nietzsche, or permanence. So you see those three characteristics, they circle around each other. They're not independent of each other. So why the sense of self is often so difficult for us to let go of is that we are believing in its permanence. We are believing in there being this non-changing experience that we have within us, and it's just not true. And we suffer because of that. So those three characteristics are really a part of each other. We can't exactly separate them out. But the what we can do is we can see when that predominantly comes out, that sense of thinking of how I am, who I am, and when we hold on to that, it's just a very helpful way to conceive of it so that we can then do something about it, and then we end up suffering a lot less. I think that's been a little bit of a while talking now, so that's probably good to end there. So, yeah, if there's anything that I've said that's been helpful, please try to keep that in mind. As I was talking about with our meditation, when the bell is rung, we often say, "Oh, the meditation's over, okay." And then sometimes we just drop it. Like, where did that go? We just had this positive experience, or maybe it was difficult, whatever it was. We're like, okay, now it's time to, cook some potatoes. So, just with like that, with the Dhamma talk, it's also helpful to, I think the Buddha talks about it as someone who's like holding a precious jewel or gem. And if there was something in there that you found was helpful, then it's also good to not just stand up when the talk's done and the gem falls on the floor and you walk away. So, okay, how can I use that? Even if it was like a version to the whole talk and you were just like, this guy is just full of it, he doesn't know what he's talking about, then what's that like for you? How can you use that in your practice so you can take that as your gem as well? Anyway, those are some words of reflection. So thank you for listening.